Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. First on the docket, that's right, Lori Vallow has been granted another bond reduction hearing. Second, when Letitia Stauch parked her Volkswagen Tiguan at the airport, was Gannon in the car? Third, Lori Loughlin gets a response from the United States attorneys, and I don't think she's going to like it. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. If you have not already done so, we would ask you to please subscribe, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we put up new content, and as always, leave us a comment below. First on the docket, that's right, Lori Vallow has been granted another bond reduction hearing by the court. So, as you may recall, Lori Vallow had a bond reduction hearing when she was arrested in Hawaii, denied. Her bond was reduced from $5 million to $1 million when she got back to Idaho. Her attorney says there's new information. It was a very generic motion and should have more than likely been denied, but he basically supplemented the motion, and the theory is that he cannot meet with his client in custody because the jail is on lockdown because of the COVID-19. The theory is that he cannot meet with Miss Vallow at the jail because they are on lockdown and restrictions because of the COVID-19 virus. Well, welcome to my world. We're dealing with that everywhere. It's called a phone call. You deal with it. Yes, there's a lot of discovery in that particular case, but it can be reviewed with your client in other means. Not the most preferable, but it doesn't necessarily mean she's going to get a bond. The district attorney responded to that request saying, hey, if she tells us where the kids are, we'll be more than happy to reconsider bond. But in the meantime, no real new information. And as we've discussed this before, the passage of time is not a new basis to ask for a bond reduction. Now, as you may also recall, there's a new magistrate judge on this particular matter because the attorneys used a rule in Utah, seems to be rather unique to Utah, that allows you basically to recuse a judge for basically no stated reason. Shouldn't be a way to basically get a bond reduction hearing either. Normally, when you ask to recuse a judge, you have to have a good faith basis and you have to be able to prove that the judge cannot be fair. Usually that's through some sort of statements beforehand. Very, very difficult. Or in maybe, say, a civil case, the judge has a financial interest, i.e. he holds stock in a company that is a defendant. He could benefit by the stock going up or down depending on the decision. Normally, though, judges recuse themselves on their own if there's an issue. And you can think a judge can be fair. You can think that a judge will be not fair to your client, but it may just be because your client's done really bad things. You have to have something more than just, he's ruled against me all the time on this particular case. I don't like this judge. I think he'll be unfair to my client. You can't go judge shopping. The judges are usually the one. I've had cases where the judges, if they recuse or have had an entire bench recuse, if a judge was a victim, like in a case I had once, I've had judges recuse because they're good friends with expert witnesses. And they say, I just can't be fair and impartial. This is a good friend of mine, and if this is the person that you're calling as a witness, this case will not be heard in front of me. Okay, let's go to the next judge. So those are the cases where you recuse a judge, not just because of some rule and thinks you're going to get a second bite or third bite at the apple when it comes to bond reduction. We'll see what happens. I don't think Ms. Vallow is going anywhere. Let me know what you think. Next on the docket, let's talk about the Gannon Stauch case. Now, something's been kind of troubling me, and that is the fact that obviously this whole case has been a lot of publicity. We've received the affidavit finally, and it appears that Letitia Stauch was not truthful to the police and has some culpability here. Let's face it. Things don't read well on paper, but like everyone we talk about here on Crime Talk, we're going to give them the presumption of innocence. One of the things that concerns me in the case so far as it relates for the prosecution is they haven't been able to explain how Gannon's body wound up in Florida. As you may recall from the particular affidavit, the police believe that she disposed of the body in Douglas County, which is just north of El Paso County up the road, but not very far necessarily from the house by car. But something that's interesting, if you take a look at the timeline, all right, we know on January 27th of 2020 that about 6:55 p.m. Letitia reports that Gannon's missing. About 10:09 p.m., the police department arrived, they searched the house, nothing really goes on. But on January 28th, in the early morning hours, Letitia Stout, specifically about 8:17 in the morning, visited Priceline.com regarding car rentals. And about 8:30 that morning, we know that she drove, Letitia Stout drove her Volkswagen Tiguan to the airport. That's confirmed by a parking ticket that was found in the car. Once she parks her Volkswagen Tiguan in the parking lot at the Colorado Springs Airport, she then goes and rents a white Kia. And at 8:50 a.m. on the 28th, she picks up Al, her husband, Gannon's father, in the Kia. And we know that at 7:02 p.m., Letitia returns back to the Colorado Springs Airport, and the Volkswagen Tiguan then exits out of the parking area. We know that she then drives to a King Supers nearby. That's confirmed by some car data as well as the video. And then, according to the police, the car data shows that she drives to this 105 mile marker in South Perry Park, which is in Douglas County, where the police believe that she had disposed of the body. That's where they were searching the particular area. But obviously, we know that that's not the case. But the police also state that there is a piece of particle board up there that has blood on it, and they tested it, and they believe that to be that of Gannon Stout. So one would think that the body of Gannon was in that vehicle throughout the day, the same vehicle that she went to pick up her husband and the father of Gannon in, and then took the body up there. Now, the question is, did she dispose of the body, and was she somehow able to get it, or was somebody else able to pick it up and then drive it to Florida? Those are questions that the prosecution's going to have to answer. Had Letitia Stout not made such ridiculous statements, and who knows, maybe there's some truth or maybe even just a small tidbit of them in any of those situations, not looking good for her based upon her conduct and the stories that she created, the multiple stories that she created because of that. The prosecution's still going to have to be able to explain those issues because the prosecution always bears the burden to do so, and the defense is certainly going to try and exploit those uncertainties. Bottom line is, and I've had it happen before in a case, it was a simple case. Had they called one witness, my client would have been promptly convicted. But the prosecution overtried the case, and they called five witnesses. It was a fight in like a quinceañera type of thing. Had they called that one witness, it would have been over. But they called like five witnesses, and it just got more confusing more and more as things went by. It got to the point where the district attorney got up and said, all right, we may not know exactly who threw the first punch. And I remember looking at the judge, and we kind of smiled at each other, and I simply got up and said, ladies and gentlemen, if the prosecution doesn't know what happened, how do they expect you to know what happened? That, my friends, is reasonable doubt. That's why the prosecution has to sew this up and button it up tightly here in the future and obviously before any trial date, or that creates reasonable doubt. Let me know what you think. There was a lot of information recently received in this particular case from the affidavit. A lot more will be coming out throughout these proceedings. I think this is going to be very, very interesting, and we'll see if the prosecution can tighten up their loose ends. Next on the docket, let's talk about Lori Loughlin and the Varsity Blues case. So, federal prosecutors have blasted Lori Loughlin and her husband, Massimo, and their motion to dismiss the case that was filed by their attorneys. Now, the defense had filed a motion to dismiss basically the whole case, alleging that the main perpetrator of this alleged conspiracy and the government's key witness, this Rick Singer, was doing all he could do to set up Laughlin and her husband. The defense has alleged that the government and Singer fabricated this evidence that basically shows that Laughlin and her husband knew that these were illicit bribes going to coaches rather than legitimate donations. The defense also alleged that the prosecution was aware of some notes, some 47 pages, and that they were exculpatory, and that they did what they could to basically bury this information, not turn it over, make misrepresentations to the defense as well as to the court. In a nutshell, the defense basically alleged that Singer and the government engineered a sham in an effort to entrap the defendants and nail them at all costs. They went further as to get a little personal with the United States attorneys and saying that they were aware of these notes, they were aware of the exculpatory, they were aware of the exculpatory nature of this information, and they did nothing to bring it to light. Now, let's talk quickly about exculpatory information. The government has a duty under Brady v. Maryland, United States Supreme Court case, to turn over everything that is exculpatory to the defense, okay? That's just fair, because why? The government's there to do justice, not to just get victories. And if there is some evidence that is exculpatory, which would exonerate or reduce the guilt of a defendant, they have a duty to turn that over. If the government fails to turn that over, it's a problem. It's a violation of due process. It's a violation of discovery rules. It's just a big, big deal. You usually find these in post-conviction matters, for example, on people on death row, where prosecutors pass away, people leave the office, they find the smoking gun memo that should have been turned over, and everybody gets a new trial. That's how serious this is. Now, the prosecution in this particular case says, well, hey, of all the discovery we've turned over, it's only 47 pages of notes, and only a few lines are actually exculpatory, so no harm, no foul, no big deal. And basically, you guys have it now, and you have plenty of time to prepare between now and the trial date, so it doesn't rise to the level of government misconduct, and therefore, obviously, the defense motion to dismiss the case should be denied. Now, obviously, any motion to dismiss for some sort of prosecutor's misconduct is a huge sanction to be imposed, and it will not be imposed lightly. More than likely, the court will look at this and say, well, the information's there. Is it really enough to warrant it? No bad faith on the part of the government. At most, it was just really busy and they got lost, and that's it. Unless if the defense can show that there were misrepresentations made directly to the court and they are actually aware of these particularly exculpatory statements, I think the defense motion will be denied. Why did the defense make it? Well, they had to. Obviously, if something came up, and let's face it, Laughlin's were in a position where they tried to play hardball early on themselves, and then the prosecution said, ha, offer withdrawn, we'll see you at trial. So everybody's looking to jockey to gain a little position, perhaps even a plea bargain type position that's going on right there. Now, the prosecution also added in their motion to respond to the motion to dismiss filed by the defense various emails that were sent to Massimo that was basically from Singer stating that, hey, I'm going to set up this fictitious account that crew people, rowers, would be on and have a profile on. And by the way, get me some video of the daughters doing some rowing, at least on a machine, and make it look like they're real athletes. That is going to hit right in the heart of the defense of, we were just making legitimate donations to these colleges, and we weren't paying bribes to get anybody put we weren't paying bribes to get our children admitted to USC. We wouldn't do that. We're just generous people. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it. If you've ever sent your child to an expensive private university in California, show of hands. Yeah, they're expensive. You don't go making additional donations. Even now they call and ask for money. Thank you very much, but I paid you a lot of money. I'm sure there are people with a lot of money who could make some donations to you. Not me. My kid was smart, got in on her own. We'll see where the Laughlin case goes. It's going to be tough for them to win this case, I think, based upon the evidence thus far. I think it's going to be very difficult because these girls were clearly not ever on the crew team or any type of rowing other than maybe an occasional rowing machine in a gym. Let me know what you think. Is Lori Loughlin getting a raw deal? I mean, come on, you pay $500,000 and they won't let your kid into USC, for God's sakes. The kids are the one I feel sorry for. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, I think he meant well, and it always breaks my heart when a former Marine gets in trouble. But our dumb criminal contestant of the day is a gentleman by the name of Peter Lucas. He's 35, and he is from Nevada. And apparently he was caught on closed caption TV appearing to shove masks. Yes, the masks that are in great demand these days. He was on video shoving these masks in his jacket before walking out of the Veterans Administration Medical Center where he had been visiting in Reno. Mr. Lucas has been arrested for theft of property. That is a felony. He faces up to a year in prison, and he'll be prosecuted in federal court because he was on federal property, and he faces up to a $100,000 fine if he was convicted. Now, it always breaks my heart, like I said, when a former Marine gets in trouble. Hopefully, you know, it just breaks my heart anytime anyone gets in trouble, but particularly Marines, got a soft place in my heart for them. But the reality of it is, he was dumb. It's on video, okay? But then what does Mr. Lucas do when he gets arrested? He says, yeah, I stole the masks, but I was going to give them away to homeless people, all right? Now, this gives us an opportunity to discuss the difference between a defense and mitigation, all right? A defense is something that says, I was legally justified in doing something, all right? Because what does the government have to prove at trial or when they charge you? That what you did was unlawful, that there was no legal excuse or justification for your conduct. Playing Robin Hood is not legally permissible under the law. You can't take other people's things and give it to someone else. It's just not done that way, all right? You maybe have admirable notions. It may be for a good cause. But what your explanation is mitigation, something that should be considered by the judge to reduce any possible penalty that would be imposed. That's mitigation, okay? No legal justification for stealing someone else's property, like it was mine, okay? Mitigation for Mr. Lucas was good in this particular situation because he was going to give it to homeless people. It's not like he was out going to engage in price gouging by selling the masks for $50 a piece. So he's got that going for him. Obviously, clear error in judgment. Let's just assume he was actually going to give them to homeless people. Very admirable. Mitigation, not a defense. Still going to be convicted. Now, we kind of changed things up here last week so that you all can decide the dumb criminal contestant of the week winner, and you can take our poll. So today, obviously, we have Mr. Lucas, the man who was playing Robin Hood with the masks. Yesterday, we had Miss Salem, the nurse, who wanted her methamphetamine scanned by the police to make sure it didn't have any of that coronavirus on it. Then we have an unidentified woman in Massachusetts that sprayed Lysol in the Walmart clerk's face when she was told she couldn't buy more than one can of Lysol. And ultimately, we have Sade Miranda, that's right, Sade, normal spelling, who threw a can of SpaghettiOs at her boyfriend when he went outside and just stepped away, tried to let it go, and she would not. So you all decide. I know who I'm voting for, and I'll let you know who I voted for on Monday. Have a great weekend. Have a great day. Stay safe. Exercise that social distancing. Wash your hands so that we can see you next week. We appreciate you taking the time. We know you have lots of things you can watch on YouTube these days, and the fact that you watch us is very humbling, and we say thank you. Have a great day.